You see the projector well enough. Can you all hear me at the back if I speak at this level?
No?
Can you hear me now? Okay. If I start to mumble, just wave. Okay. It's an absolute pleasure to be here tonight. Not least because it gives me an excuse to dig out my Valentine's tie, which sadly I haven't had to wear for some years now. And understandably, the theme is about the heart. And we're all surrounded, not least today, by these sort of pictures of the heart. But I'm afraid to have to start by telling you the heart looks absolutely nothing like this. At all. And in fact, if your heart did look like that, you'd be in major trouble. Now, I don't want to put you off your dinner, but this is what a heart does look like. Okay, that's someone having bypass surgery, that's the chest open, and that's the heart. And I spend quite a lot of my day peering over the top of the table looking at surgeons doing this. And that's a surgeon operating on a beating heart. So as you can see, that cartoon we use really doesn't look like a heart at all. And I must say, when I started to put these slides together, I got a little bit distracted. Because I suddenly asked myself, well, why do we use that cartoon? Actually, it turns out no one seems to know. But one of the theories dates back to this coin, which is many hundreds of years old, and originates from this city, which is now in Libya. And that's the picture of a seed pod of an unusual plant, which was extremely valuable in those times. It was a very powerful contraceptive. And that's the first ever apparently documented use of that symbol that looks rather like a heart. Others argue that it's based on this leaf, the ivy leaf, which again in historical literature had some erotic properties, shall we say. I'm not sure which one to believe, but the key message is the cartoon we use actually looks nothing like the heart at all. Now, I have the absolute privilege of working at the John Radcliffe and looking at people's hearts all day. That's what I do. I take pictures of people's hearts. And I'm going on to explain to you how I do that and a little bit about why I do it. And the other thing I want you to take home today is an understanding of how complicated the heart is. And people have been interested in the heart for many, many years. And some of you may have seen these sorts of pictures by Leonardo da Vinci, who was the first person to really, really try and understand the complexity of the heart. And these are some of his amazing illustrations done, again, several hundred years ago. And the heart has many parts to it. And in its most basic form, it's a pump, and it pushes blood around the body. But there is a lot more to it than that. And here's just one of the heart valves at the bottom right. That's the aortic valve, one of the most important valves in the heart. And again, that's a drawing by Leonardo da Vinci trying to understand how that valve works. Why does it stop blood going in one direction? And they have to work extremely well for a very long time. Your heart will beat 100,000 times a day. And if you do the maths, that works out about 2¾ billion beats in your lifetime. And the absolutely astonishing thing about the heart is it can never rest. It can never stop and take a break. It has to keep doing that all the time, from the moment you're born until the end of your life. But that first valve I showed you is actually quite a simple structure. It's one of the most simple valves in the heart. This is a different valve. This is the mitral valve. You know, there are four valves in the heart, and I've shown you two of them. But this one is the most complicated. And actually, as an engineering challenge, if you set out to try and design a valve that can do what this valve can do, I think most of us would fail. And the fact that this valve works as well as it does is absolutely extraordinary when you think about the challenges it has to face. And as I said to you, you can think of the heart as a pump. And that diagram on the left looks a bit like your central heating system at home. There's a pump and some pipes and, for all intents and purposes, some radiators. But the heart is much more than just a pump. The top right is a cast of the heart's own arteries. For the heart to beat 100,000 times a day, it needs an awful lot of blood for itself. And those are the heart arteries. And I'm pretty sure that all of you in the room will know someone who's had trouble with their heart arteries. It's a very, very common problem, coronary artery disease, furring up of the heart arteries. But there's more to it than that. So the bottom right is the heart's electrical system. The heart has to control itself and regulate its rhythm, know when you're sleeping, know when you're running. And it does that through quite a complicated electrical system. There's intricate wiring throughout the heart. And there's more to it than that. The heart secretes hormones that, again, have important control functions throughout the body. So the heart is far more than just a pump. And actually, even if you take a view that it is just a pump, it's an extremely complicated system of muscle fibres. And this is some very delicate dissection of a heart. And all those lines and twists and muscle fibres that are all carefully aligned to work in a very harmonious fashion. And the heart isn't just a bellows that does this. It actually twists and wrings the blood out of the heart. And it can only do that if the muscles are aligned absolutely perfectly. So the heart is extremely complicated, an absolutely fabulous piece of engineering, and really quite remarkable. And I think I'm certainly guilty of forgetting that because I see it so often. We've been taking pictures of hearts for many, many years. This is a straightforward chest x-ray. If I can wake the cursor up, this is the heart here. This is the shadow of the heart. These are the lungs to the side. And although this is quite good as a very crude assessment of how the heart sits in the chest, it of course gives you none of that detail and none of those subtleties about the complexity of the heart. You can't see the valves, you can't see the heart arteries, and it's a static picture. And I've told you the heart pumps and moves, so really a static picture is of no real use. So over the last 60 years, people have been trying to develop better ways to look at the heart and to understand its function. And this is a very long-standing technique where the patient is injected with a radioactive tracer that's designed to go into the heart and light the heart up. They then sit under a special camera and that takes pictures. And it's extremely good at showing parts of the heart that are receiving plenty of blood and parts of the heart that aren't getting enough blood. So it's a very good test for looking at angina, for example, a very common symptom when the heart is not getting enough blood. But it's a static picture. We don't see the valves. We don't see the blood moving. And it really is only useful for that one small aspect of the heart's function. So people are thinking of bigger and better tests. And medicine moves at an enormous pace and things change rapidly. And this is a CT scanner. And I suspect many of you in the room may have had CT scans for other reasons, but we can now scan the heart. Sorry, let me go back. So this is the donut on the left of the CT scanner. Scan takes about 5 minutes. And that's the sort of picture you can get at the end. A very accurate representation of the heart's anatomy, the heart's shape, how it's all plumbed together. And those pipes running down the outside are those coronary arteries. But it's a still picture, it doesn't move. Doesn't really help you decide how well the heart's pumping. And is not very good at looking at the valves, for example. This is an MRI scan of the heart. This is a much more arduous scan for the patient. That CT scanner is a bit like a polo mint. Only part of you is inside it. Your legs stick out and your head sticks out. This is quite a long, dark tunnel. You can see how snug a fit it is. And if you're on the larger size, getting a patient in that can be quite difficult. Sometimes getting them out again is even harder. The patient has to wear a frame over their chest, and that's quite constricting. And if any of you have ever had an MRI scan, they're extremely noisy. Very loud. But it does give us the luxury of a moving picture, and that's a heart beating, a normal heart on the right-hand side. And it's really very powerful at understanding how well the heart works. Useless at looking at the heart arteries. And not very good at looking at the heart valves. So as you'll see, all of these tests have their own strength and weakness. But the test that I use is echocardiography. And that's a slightly curious and slightly overblown term for an ultrasound of the heart. And the unusual thing is it's one of the oldest tests we have. It was was first developed just after the Second World War. And the technology of ultrasound dates back to this, which is sonar. Bouncing sound waves under the sea and understanding the reflections of that sound wave to give you a map of the sea floor or any other objects within the sea. And ultrasound is exactly the same. You fire out a beam of sound and you monitor and listen to the reflection. It's ultrasound, so you can't hear it, and it's extremely fast moving, but it's the same principle. And some very bold and really quite remarkable doctors in the late 40s and early 50s recognised the potential use of ultrasound in medicine. And this is the first ever ultrasound done as part of a clinical test. Now, I won't tease you and ask you to tell me what that is, but believe it or not, that's an ultrasound of someone's skull. No idea why you'd want to ultrasound someone's skull, but that's where they started. And the equipment then looked very prehistoric, and the displays were extremely primitive. But this is where it all started. And that row of dots, believe it or not, is someone's heart. And what staggers me is that the people at the time were able to use that information and understand what they were seeing, which is really quite astonishing. It took about 10 years to go from a row of dots to what sort of looks like the traditional grainy grey and white pictures you might think of as ultrasound. And again, believe it or not, that is someone's heart. And the experts in their day could look at that and say, yep, that's a problem with the mitral valve, this person needs a heart operation. Again, it's incredible they were able to do that. Because it's a lot easier for me, because I use machines like this, which cost about £100,000, but are extremely good. They're large, powerful computers. That's the machine on the left, and that's the probe that I hold, and you apply that probe to the patient's chest, and you get your picture. And I said, we're all probably quite familiar with seeing ultrasound scans. I'm sure many of us have had these pictures proudly brought home by expectant mothers. And the technology we use to look at people's hearts is exactly the same. And with the kit I use, we can get pictures like this, which is light years on from the early stages, but the actual principles are exactly the same. Bouncing sound waves off the heart and understanding the reflections. So this is someone's heart. There are four chambers visible. Top right is the main pumping chamber. Below that is one of the receiving chambers. And in this shot, there's a pair of valves visible. We can go one step further and image the blood flowing through the heart. And these colours reflect the direction the blood is flowing and the speed the blood is flowing. And this is in somebody who's got quite a major problem with one of their valves. And that flame of blue and yellow that's sweeping this way is abnormal flow. And this person does need a heart operation and needs that valve fixing. Some of you may have seen these pictures, these astonishing pictures of 20, 22-week-old babies done with ultrasound, but with 3D ultrasound. Now, we know 3D is the next big thing everywhere, isn't it? But actually, it is the next big thing in ultrasound. And whereas before, we were just taking a single slice through the baby or the heart, now we can take a much wider field of view, and we can take the same technology they've been using in fetal ultrasound and use it on the heart. And here's a 3D echo of someone's heart, focusing mainly on the main pumping chamber. But you can see we now have an appreciation of depth. We can see more of the valve at the bottom. And it allows us to much more accurately assess the heart, because in fact we've got the whole heart in view rather than just a single slice. And it's an incredibly powerful tool. All the pictures I've shown you so far are taken with the probe on the chest. We can be a little more invasive, and the outer probe is exactly the same as the one I hold in my hand, that is mounted on the end of that black tube, and with enough persuasion and some sedation, patients can swallow that quite easily. And all of those crisps that you're eating now travel directly behind your heart. The gullet is immediately behind the heart. So if you park the end of that thicker black tube about here, you are directly behind the heart. There's nothing else in the way, and your pictures are that much better because you're not having to scan through skin, lung, bone. You're right there. And I'll come back to the other one a little bit later. So this is the picture taken from the camera in the gullet, and we're now right there. The heart is right in front of us. And this is, again, is an abnormal valve on the left, a normal valve on the right. And you can perhaps appreciate that the resolution and the quality of the image is really quite extraordinary. And we can measure down to about half a millimetre. We can look at blood flow in the same way as before. But what's really exciting is we can use 3D again. And this is the same valve. So before you were just seeing a single slice. Now we can see the whole valve spread out, and that bulgy thing that's lifting up at the back is the abnormal part of the valve. And we can suddenly understand its relationship and its structure in much more detail. And it's very, very helpful when a surgeon is thinking about mending a valve to have this sort of picture, because they can immediately start to recognise what they're going to see once they're inside. And we can turn those pictures and manipulate them, and we can identically reproduce effectively the view the surgeon will get. And if a surgeon set out to repair this valve, the mitral valve, this is what he would see. Just an example now of how the 3D pictures mimic real life. On the left is a very, very diseased and abnormal aortic valve. All of that yellow crusting inside the valve leaflets is thickening and chalk, effectively, stops the valve opening. On the right is a 3D echo of, not the same person, but a very similar valve. And I think you can appreciate the correlation between the anatomy and the pathology and what the scan tells us. So these 3D scans are really very, very good at letting us know exactly what the problem is and how we need to fix it. Now, I said I've come back to this other probe, the white-handled probe, with that much thinner line. And this is taking things a little step further, because we don't put that probe down the food pipe, we put it directly into the heart. So we go into a vein at the top of the leg, we're kind enough to give some anaesthetic first, and we thread that probe up into the heart. And that's one of our labs in Oxford where we're doing exactly that. The patient's out of sight under that blue cover. I think that's me on the far left and some other colleagues. And we've got a probe inside the patient's heart and we're taking pictures from inside their heart. This is the probe. It's very simple. You can steer the end in any direction you like, which helps you to take your pictures. It's disposable and you throw it away at the end of the procedure. And this is the sort of picture you get. So on the left is a cartoon. The legs will be down here somewhere. This is the probe coming up into the heart. And over on the right is a movie taken from inside the heart. And here is the aortic valve. And you can't get any closer to it than that. And you can see it in extraordinary detail and resolution. Now, we don't do that just to take pictures and understand the problems. We go as far as putting these cameras inside the heart because we're going to go on to do something. And we use these cameras to guide us and tell us what we're doing and tell us we're doing it right. This one's a little dark. This thing here is a plug made of nitinol, same thing those fancy glasses are made of, that's being put into the heart to cover a hole in the heart which is in here. And that's the plug being released and deployed. That's someone having a hole in their heart closed under local anaesthetic and using almost exclusively ultrasound. And that takes about 20 minutes. Things have moved on remarkably in the last 3 years. And if you had that bad aortic valve I showed you a few slides back, with all that thickening and chalk and calcium, your only hope was to have a surgeon replace the valve. But unfortunately, there are many patients where that simply is not an option. They're too ill, they're too frail, they've got too many other problems. And until 3 years ago, there was nothing else we could do. Some very brave and very clever French doctors came up with a suggestion that you could replace someone's heart valve from the leg. Now, everyone literally fell over laughing when they first suggested that, because that just sounds crazy. But actually, you can, and we do it in Oxford. And it's a procedure where you navigate from the leg artery up into the heart, and you squash the old valve out of the way and leave a new valve behind. And these are just some selected shots. But if I convince you, this is a picture, again, taken from directly behind the heart. The abnormal valve is sitting in here, and this big tube is the new valve, and in fact the new valve is that bit there. In fact, if I skip on, this is now a shot of the new valve going in. So the valve's on a balloon, the balloon is inflated, squashes the old valve out of the way, and leaves a new valve behind. But you have to get it in exactly the right place, to within about a millimetre. If you're too high, it falls out. And if you're too low, it can block the important arteries of the heart. And you can only get it spot on if you have the echo tools available to be certain you're in the right place. And here's one of our patients. This was the picture beforehand. Here's all that furring and crusting up of the valve. The valve's barely opening. And there's the new valve. I'm sure you can appreciate those thin leaflets of the new valve opening very freely. You can't quite see the times because they're covered up, but take it from me, there's about 45 minutes between those two pictures. And the patient's left with a 2-inch scar at the top of their leg, maybe spends 3 days in hospital and then goes home. We're now even in this position where echo scans are miniaturized, portable, and can literally fit in your pocket. You can carry them around with you, and you can take pictures anywhere. And one of the enormous powers of echo, even though it's 50 years old technology, is you can take it anywhere. So if someone comes into A&E critically unwell, we want to know what the heart's doing, then you take the echo. You can't wheel an MRI scanner down to A&E. And I don't think it'll be too long until we're here. We're not quite there yet. But I'm sure one day we'll just be plugging probes into our iPhones and taking pictures wherever we like. I'm going to finish there. I've cantered through echo, and I hope I've tried to explain to you the variety of things we can do with echo, and really the very crucial role it plays in medicine today. And I think it's true to say that almost any patient that comes into the John Radcliffe with a heart problem will have an echo. And last year we did just short of 20,000 echo scans in the whole year, which is an extraordinary number. Now, I do have an ulterior motive for speaking to you tonight, and that's to raise awareness of our fundraising. I'm not going to pass a hat round tonight, but I want you to take away the message of why echo is so important. And if you'll allow me, we're going to play you a very short video that explains why we're raising money for our echo department in Oxford. And there's some brochures and literature for you to take away. And if you have any other interested friends you can pass it on to them, please spread the word. There are some forthcoming events in the year coming up. There's some open days and some activities that people are more welcome to come to. And I can explain those again later on. But perhaps we'll cut to the video.
Okay, this is just having a little bit of a problem. She's getting it working. Just to be very, very clear, our hat tonight is just for the cafe. We're not trying to pass it around on behalf of the Hospital Trust. do definitely take the leaflets away if you're interested in getting in touch with it.
We should have sound by this point, I think. There should be, yes.
New technology for us, sorry.
The latest thing is the silent movie. So.
Absolutely. To be. Which said, the John Radcliffe Hospital has some world-class facilities for cardiac care. We treat many thousands of patients each year, and most of these have an echocardiogram at some time during their stay with us. The current echocardiography department is, however, desperately in need of improvement. Our staff are split on three different levels, on two floors, including a very cramped outpatient area outside the consultant's corridor. This provides a poor service for patients who often have to wait in conditions where there is little privacy and no ventilation. We'd like to improve our echocardiography department to bring it up to the world-class facilities that exist in our heart centre and give us a department that we're proud to work in. We have a space where the old cardiology ward used to be, which sits nicely between outpatients and the new heart centre where most of our patients come from. The space would be large enough to house all the parts of the department and bring together for the first time everyone performing echocardiography within our heart centre. We even have a model for our new echo department in the university research facilities, which exist the floor below where we plan to build our new centre. This unit is set up for research, but provides an optimal environment for echo, which we would aim to replicate in our clinical department. These research facilities show you the sort of quality environment and space that we could create with our new echo unit. This new echo suite will conduct studies and investigations to help diagnose the full range of cardiac diseases from valve problems to heart failure. Its location means it will be within easy reach of the cath labs, wards, operating theatres and outpatient areas. It will also be adjacent to the existing world-leading university research imaging facilities. This will create a unique interactive environment between university research, such as the Oxvalve study in the over-65s, and the hospital's clinical department. A centrally located echo suite, such as we describe, will shorten investigations and bring consultants, researchers, and technicians together with the patients for the first time. We can increase the number of patients we see and reduce their waiting and treatment times as a result, while at the same time, we'll make quality control, research, risk management, and clinical governance that much easier to perform. I hope that you will join me in our vision to create a world-class echocardiography centre and help us raise the necessary funds to make this dream a reality.
Thank you for allowing me to show you that. It's really just to raise awareness of our campaign. That's all I'm out here to do tonight.
The John Radcliffe Hospital has...
Once is enough for now, I think. Okay, so I'll finish there and hand you back to
Thank
Rachel.
Thank you very much. Before we break, I'm just going to warn you that I'm usurping my position completely and I'm going to bag the first questions. You've got to tell us more about how this works. So when we come back after the break, perhaps you can tell us a bit more.
Yeah,
I've got millions of questions, like how on earth do you know what, how do you get down to the heart through all the other layers and all the things like that. We'll have plenty of time to explore that. So we're going to put the lights back on a bit and we'll have a 5-minute, 10-minute break. So please don't hesitate to come up and get more food and drink if you want to, and we'll bring as much as we can round. And do reorganise the tables and chairs if you need to a bit. I know lots of people came in right at the very beginning, so please, we don't want you sitting by the wall just for no reason. The chairs can be moved. Thank you again to Jim, and we'll see you all in a few minutes.